Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pleasure to be back in the OU Center. My traditional greeting in the couple of weeks before Pesach is to welcome all the ladies who've taken time out from cleaning their houses to come and hear a shir, and also to welcome all the men who have been thrown out of the house during Pesach cleaning. But my thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Sam Shore, who's organized the event, and of course the topic at hand is Haggadah, and Baruch Hashem, I have Haggadah published a number of years ago, based on many years of shiurim. There's many Haggadahs. I think if you have a business card, you have a Haggadah, and they're all good. Kulam ahuvim, kulam berurim. But I did feel that sometimes the discourse perhaps doesn't always take you in a straight line experientially. And that's really what I would like to speak about, is the atmosphere of Seder night. So much practical preparation goes into the night. All the more reason to have an expectation and a sense of what the night should be like. At the center of the evening, of course, is the story, the retelling of the Exodus from Egypt. And to tell this story is one of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. It's easy not to know that because it's not prefaced with a bracha, and mitzvahs typically are introduced with brachos, but there is no asher kedishanu b'mitzvosav tzivanu to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We just go straight into it, and many commentators are wondering where that blessing went to, but it's not there. But the mitzvah is a mitzvah. And yet, the way that we tell the story is not intuitive. We do not tell the story the way we perhaps would have expected to do so, namely, to start at the beginning and keep going. Rather, the form that the story takes is that of drashos, and by which I mean specifically, Maggid has about 10 or 11 introductory paragraphs before we actually start to tell the story. It's quite important. Some people peak, you could say, in the sixth paragraph, and to borrow a modern term, they're all Maggided out before they actually have started to tell the story, because it really begins with that section of Arami Oved Avi. Those four psukim, Arami, Oved, Avi, and if you've ever seen them as entire psukim intact, it can be somewhat disorientating, because on Seder night we hack them to pieces, and we take each word, and we go back to the scene of the crime, and we back it up, and we say such and such and such, Kemoshina Emar, and then another thing, Kemoshina Emar. The most often repeated words, the most oft repeated words on Seder night are the words Kemoshina Emar. Although that might depend on how you sing Dayenu, we can't get into that just at the moment, but we keep on going backwards and forwards. This is in Chumash Devarim, that short section of Arami Oved Avi. We start at the end, keep on moving around. I don't know, why not just start reading Chumash Shemos and select judiciously, but read the story in a straight line, like a mensch. One of the highlights of Seder night is Hallel. Now Hallel, of course, itself is split into two, the first two paragraphs at the end of Maggid, and then the rest at the end of the Seder, so it is split into two. It's very telling to see how we introduce Hallel, because we introduce it with four unlikely words. Once again, no bracha. But we introduce it with the words V'nomar lefonav shira chadasha, and then we start Hallel. We will say before him a new song, and then we start Hallel. Hallel is many things, but it is not a new song. And if it is a new song, something is wrong. It's a classic. We said it today. If someone told me they discovered a new song and proceed to identify halal, I'd have to ask them where they've been. Because Jews who are in the know that halal is a regular thing. And it is many things, but it's not a Shira Hadasha, it's not a new song. So why do we call it what it isn't? Basic question. The Rambam, I believe, opens up the atmosphere of Seder night. Because as a mitzvah of the 613 mitzvahs, the Rambam speaks about it. He has a work devoted to a discussion, a comprehensive discussion of all the 613 mitzvahs called Sefer HaMitzvahs. And in Positive Mitzvah 57, when the Rambam mentions the mitzvah of telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus on Seder night, he cites what we say in the Haggadah, V'chol hamarbe lesaper b'yetzias Mitzrayim, harei ze meshubach. The more you tell the story, the better it is. And the Rambam, the better it is, the better you are. The Rambam elaborates on what kol hamarbe means. And he adds two words which I believe change everything. And they are, says Rambam, v'chol hamarbe, the more a person discusses at length the story and the miracles, v'hodoslo, and words of thanksgiving, words of thanks, harei ze meshubach. The Rambam has interjected into his basic formula of the mitzvah. In Sefer HaMitzvahs, it's not a place for elaborate details. It's the core definition of the mitzvah. And according to the Rambam, integral within the mitzvah of telling the story is the hodoslo. That tells us that Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, or Seder night, is an Erev Hoda'ah. It is an evening of, it's the original Thanksgiving, as far as we're concerned, and that's the atmosphere that should permeate. It's an evening, and I would say this advisedly, because many people say that Seder night is a night of Jewish education. I think that's underselling Jewish education by approximately 363 days. Every day is a day of Jewish education. Seder night is not a night of education, it's a night of appreciation. That's an atmospheric definition, and it should change everything. And indeed, according to some, this is the reason behind the number. It's like the magic number of Seder night. It runs through the whole evening. It's the number four. There's four of everything. There's four cups, and there's four questions, and there's four suns, and there's four expressions, and why? Why is the number four so Seder night appropriate? And the Vilna Gaon explains. We have a concept that if a person experiences a great kindness from Hashem, he has a special obligation of Hoda'ah. In our experience, we call that Benshin Gomel, right? To make the bracha of Hagomel. And what are the four things if a person was unwell and then recuperates? If a person was in captivity and then is set free? Number three, if he travels through the desert. And number four, if he travels through the sea. In the words of the Gemara in Maseches Brachos, Daf Nun Dalet, Arba'a chayovim lehodos. There are four people who have a special obligation of hoda'ah. Again, in our experience, that takes the form of Birchas Hagomel. You can make a Sudas Hoda'ah. It's a very encouraged thing. Well, consider our experiences as we left Egypt. How many of these kindnesses were we the beneficiaries of? Were we the recipients of? Well, says the Vilna Gaon, the answer is yes. Because we're four for four. We were in captivity and set free. Our health was in a precarious state due to the living conditions. Released from that, we went through the desert, and without putting too fine a point on it, we went through the sea. And therefore, we emerge with a fourfold. We qualify on each of the four counts. And this is why the number four is such a central number, because we have, it's a quadruple Sudas Hodah for each of those things. And indeed, this will give us a deeper insight into a very interesting thing. One of the family highlights for Seder night is Manishtana. Okay, the child stands on a chair, he's the center of attention, he's the star of the show, and it's a very important time. And he asks the four questions. The first of those four questions, as we know, Shebechol halelos onu ochlim chometz u'matzah. On all other nights we eat chometz and matzah. Halayla hazeh kula matzah, tonight just matzah. That's the first of the four. Actually, that question is absolutely baffling. Because the truth is, I have never met anyone who eats chometz and matzah on all other nights. We don't. I don't think I even know anyone who ate chometz and matzah ever. So it's a very interesting thing to ask. I mean, he wants to know, but we need to understand. Now, I would caution you, do not confront the child as he's saying Manishtana, okay? He may never get down from that chair, okay? He might be struck with, Dickens would call Miss Havisham syndrome, and he'll just stay there indefinitely. So, but we need to know. I mean, he's saying something, and it doesn't seem to be true. Now, you could say that what we mean when we say on all other nights we eat chametz and matzah, it means either or, which is true. Either or. The only problem is the words chametz u'matzah do not mean either or. They mean and. Right? Later on, when we talk about sitting and reclining, that's when we use either or. Shebechol halelos onu ochlim bein yoshvin bein mesubim. That's how you say either or. One of the special mitzvahs of the evening is for people to recline. It's an interesting mitzvah for us because we don't see people reclining at celebratory feasts too much nowadays, at least not on purpose and not in the beginning of the evening. But either way, it is one of the formal celebrations. So that's how you say either or, bein this or bein this. But we don't say bein chometz u bein matzah. We say chometz u matzah. What's it all about? You know, we mentioned you have these four people who are obligated to give a special hodah. And again, in our experience, that's Birchas Hagoma. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, there's a special korban that would be brought, whose name basically says it all. It's called Korban Toda. Korban Toda. And it's really brought for this, for these experiences. The Korban Toda is very interesting. And actually, it's next week's Parsha. I think Parsha Tzav, along with a lot of other things in the house, gets swept away when Pesach is coming. But it's good to note, Korban Toda is unique for the following two or three reasons. Number one, you have less time to eat it than usual. Normally, you have 2 days. Korban Toda, just one. Additionally, you have additional food. Because apart from the Korban itself, you have 40 loaves of bread. 40 loaves of bread is a lot of bread. And finally, it is forbidden to leave Korban food over the allowed time. And now you're in an interesting situation because there's you, a lamb, 40 loaves of bread, and a clock. And you have one of two options. You can try and burrow through the whole thing by yourself. Maybe you'll succeed. I don't know. In my personal opinion, if someone does succeed in eating all that food within the space of 1 day, he's probably liable to bring another Korban Toda just for surviving that experience. What's more likely to happen is that you'll invite others to partake of the meal with you. But why would you do that? Why is the Torah nudging you to invite guests? Because it wants people there so that you can tell them what it is that the Korban's about. This is the original Seudas Hoda'ah. This is the source in the Torah of Pirsumei Nisa, because the Torah says more food plus less time equals more people. Tell them about it. And indeed, that's exactly what we are referring to in Hallel, which again is something that we'll be saying on a regular basis in the coming days. We talk about the Korban Todah in Hallel. What do we say? Lecha ezbach zevach Todah. So David says, I will offer a zevach Todah. And then he says, uveshem Hashem ekra. And I will call out in Hashem's name. And I don't know about you, but I look at words like that, b'shem Hashem ekra, I have no idea what that means. I know that Avram did it. I'm sure he did. He did a great job. I don't know what I'm meant to do. What does it mean? Uveshem Hashem ekra. It has this very vague biblical sound to it. But what does it mean practically? Says the Netziv in his Perush HaMikdavar, these are the two stages of the Korban Todah experience. Stage one, Lecha Ezbach Zevach Todah, the bringing of the Korban. Stage two, later on that evening, Uveshem Hashem Ekra, and I'll call out in Hashem's name. Meaning what? I'll tell people why I brought the Korban. I'll tell people what he did for me. And interestingly, and if you've ever seen this, it's really a fascinating, what I would call parshanut construct, is that this verse is split up into two. Isn't that right? Stage one, Korban. Stage two, Su'uda. The next two psukim also have two parts. They also should turn them vertical because they refer to stage one and stage two respectively. How so? What's the next verse? Nidarai Lashem HaShalem. Once again, those are qualifying these two things. With reference to the bringing of the Korban, Nedarai Lashem HaShalem, I'm bringing my, fulfilling my neder. With reference to the second stage of the Suda, Negda Nalachalamo, I'll be telling everyone about it. And finally, where do these two things take place? Where does the Korban take place? Bechatzros Beis Hashem, in the Beis HaMikdash. And where does the Suda take place? Besochei Yerushalayim, anywhere in Jerusalem. So you see these three verses, which have two halves each, are really to be turned on their side, and you have a thread that runs through the first of the, all of the first verses and all of the second halves. All of the first halves, all of the second halves. That's Korban Todah. Now, one thing we should know about Manishtana, it dates back to temple times. How do we know that? Because one of the original questions on the list of Manishtana, which is currently not on the list, is about the Korban Pesach. Because as you may know, I'm sure you do know, there's a very specific way the Korban Pesach has to be prepared. Namely, it's got to be roasted. Tzli eish, eino ne'echal elatzoli, can only be roasted, as opposed to other korbanos. And it's funny to hear it if you're not familiar with it, but this is one of the original Manishtana questions. Shebechol halelos anu ochlin, however, whether it's cooked or casseroled or roasted or barbecued, halayla azeh kulo tzali, tonight only roasted. Now that tells us that Manishtana goes back to Beis HaMikdash times, to Korban Pesach times. Any child attending a Seder on in Beis HaMikdash times could not fail to identify it instantly as a Korban Todah event. The families come to Jerusalem, they brought a Korban, they're retiring to somewhere in the city, everyone's gathered round. It has Korban Todah written all over it. And in fact, everything that you have in a Korban Todah, you have here. Except for one thing. The 40 loaves of bread that accompany Korban Todah, although most bread that accompanies the Korban is matzah, that's this week's parsha, lo te'afeh chametz. An exception is Korban Todah. Some of the loaves are chametz, some of them are matzah. And now, says Rav Shaul of Amsterdam in the Sefer of Binyan Ariel, we now understand the nuance of the opening question. Shebechol halelos anu ochlim chametz u'matzah. On all other nights we eat chametz u'matzah. It's true. On all other nights, meaning on every other night like this. It's a Korban Todah, right? So where's the chametz? Halayla zeh kulo matzah. It's a very interesting insight into that opening question. And as is the way of things, it takes scholars in later generations to understand the mind of a child in earlier generations. That's actually still true. But so what we do see is the theme of Hoda'ah. I mean, the Korban Todah is like a kosher. The Korban Pesach is a kosher Pesach Korban Todah, because the Seder is an Erev Hoda'ah. And coming back to the four cups, by the way, we mentioned that the Korban Todah is Lecha Ezbach Zevach Todah. And where does the Hoda come in? Uveshem Hashem Ekra. But isn't there another verse in the Hallel which also ends with the words Beshem Hashem Ekra? Namely, Kos Yeshuos Esa, Uveshem Hashem Ekra. In other words, for us, it is a perfect usage of the four cups, because each of these cups, like the Korban Todah, is Kos Yeshuos Esa, to give thanks to Hashem. And it's for this reason, and I mention this advisedly because it's a central part of the Haggadah, but it's probably the most often ignored part of the Haggadah, simply because we don't know what to do with it. We're uncomfortable with it. And that is, a person should see themselves as if they came out of Egypt, which is so unexpected. And the reason why I think we're not comfortable with it is not because we don't know how to use our imaginations. We certainly know how to use our imaginations. We've just been encouraged never to use them when we're doing mitzvahs, because imagination and mitzvahs are not a good match in almost every situation. Okay, if you have a question, for example, you're not sure about how to do a certain mitzvah, let's say Arba Minim, you ask your rabbi, you know, how do I do the following? And his answer is, use your imagination. You need a new rabbi. So we're trained to keep the two at arm's length. And that's where we're not prepared for the one time in the year where that is the way to do the mitzvah. And the reason very simply is because the more you imagine yourself there, the more you connect emotionally with those events. And appreciation is an emotional response. It's an emotional state. And this is the reason why we tell the story, just to go back to our opening question. We tell the story the base from which the story is launched are those verses of Arameo Veidavi, tucked away in the second half of Chumash Devarim. Why? There's one thing those verses have that all the Parshas of Shemos don't have. The Parshas of Shemos are descriptive of history. The verses of Arameo Veidavi are verses of appreciation. A person brings his fruits and he says, Arameo Veidavi, look where we started, look how far we've come, look what I have, here it is. The theme, the signature of those verses is that of Hoda'ah. That's where you want to tell the story from. And if you have to start importing and exporting verses, so be it, it's worth it, because that's the atmosphere that the night is all about. We mentioned before that there is no bracha before Hallel. It is interesting, actually, that many people have the custom of saying Hallel in Shul on Seder night. I have to say, I believe we're witness to something of a transition over the last number of years. I think it's certainly an established minhag here in Eretz Yisrael. I still recall when I was young in London, we didn't say Hallel. And then slowly but surely it made inroads, and then there was like, if you wanted, you could say at the end, and it began as a kind of an underground movement. And then slowly, but I think nowadays everyone says Hallel. I wonder if it wasn't very simply because everyone had been sending all of their children to Eretz Yisrael, and they come back and they said, we said Hallel, and then people didn't want to feel left out. As Yaakov says to his sons, Kechu mizimras haaretz, bring back Zmiras from the land of Israel. So they brought back Hallel on Seder night. I'm sure there's more formal and halachic explanations, but that's my personal feeling. Either way, when we come to the Seder itself, we do not make a bracha. We just launch straight into Hallel. It's quite It's quite sudden. And many Rishonim want to know why. Where did the bracha of Hallel go? I think we add in so many things to the Haggadah, it's easy not to notice the things that go missing. Like the bracha on Hallel. And this question was asked to one of the last and greatest of the Gaonim, Rav Hai Gaon. Now Rav Hai Gaon, and he's really mamish at the cusp. He's going to be in the 900s, maybe early 1000s. And the last of the Gaonim as an era, that's before even the Rishonim. I know, I read the papers, Gaonim have made a comeback, but it's certainly true to say that the term Gaon has suffered greatly from inflation. But in terms of the era, it's Rav Hai Gaon. And his response is as follows. The reason why we don't say Hallel, a bracha before Hallel on Seder night is because the Hallel on Seder night is not a kriya. It's not a recitation. Rather, it's a shira. It's a song. Now, those words require our contemplation. Again, just to restate what he said, or to repeat what he said more correctly. That the reason why we don't say a bracha before Hallel on Seder night is because it's not a kriya, it's not a recitation, it's a shira, it's a song. That's very interesting. I know there's many places where they like to sing Hallel the whole time. I mean, depending on how much time you have, it's great. And in fact, Hallel should be sung often. I've never heard anyone object to someone singing Hallel on religious grounds. As if to say, well, now that you're singing, it's a shira, and we just made a bracha, so you just ruined everything. By the way, some people do ruin everything when they start singing, but not for halachic reasons. What do we say? We don't say a bracha before Hallel on Seder night, but we do say something else, namely, person is obligated to see themselves as if they came out of Egypt. We say that just before Hallel, and we connect them with the word lefichach. That's when you pick up the cup, lefichach. Lefichach is a highly charged word, because lefichach means therefore, and therefore means because of A, B is about to happen. Which sounds like, because we have to see ourselves as if we came out of Egypt, that's why we need to say Hallel. But is that so? The requirement of Hallel is only because you have to see yourself as if you came out of Egypt? We say Hallel on Hanukkah. I've never heard any requirement that you have to see yourself as if you were in the Hanukkah story, as if you're battling against the Greeks, as if you're lighting the menorah. I've never heard such a thing. And Hallel is loud and proud. So the obligation of Hallel is not a function of seeing yourself as if it happened to you. But on Seder night, why do we say it that way? You've got to see yourself as if you came out of Egypt, and that's why we're chayav to say Hallel. So Reb Velvel Soloveitchik, the son of Reb Chaim, Rav Reb Brisk himself, after him, explains. And if you know anything about Brisk, you won't be surprised to hear that he says there are two types of Hallel. There are two dinim. There are two dynamics within Hallel. Namely, if you wish to mark the day as a special day because something special happened years ago, or maybe because it's Yom Tov, that's one type of Hallel. And we call that Kriyas HaHallel. Ashkenazim actually make, the nusach of the bracha is Likro Es HaHallel. I know that for Sfardim the bracha is Ligmor Et HaHallel, okay? But that's one type of Hallel, Likro Es HaHallel. And that's called Kriya, that's called a recitation. If you want to sing it, good for you. Good luck. But there's another type of Hallel. What if something just happened to you right now? And you should respond. What is the Jewish response to a miracle? It's Shira. It's a song of thanks. And Hallel is a great song of thanks. And that is why we introduce the Hallel on Seder night by saying a person should see themselves as if they came out of Egypt. Why? Because that's the introduction for this type of halal. Because if you just came out of Egypt, then you need to say halal, not because there's a mitzvah to say halal, but because you just came out of Egypt. Or in Rav Haigon's words, not as a kriya, but as a shira. And for shira, there's no bracha. When the Jewish people originally said halal, according to the Talmud Yerushalmi, halal was originally said by the Jewish people when they came out, a song of praise for coming out of Egypt on day one, in addition to az yashir on day seven. They didn't say a blessing beforehand. It's not the mitzvah of halal. It's an emotional response. And that's what halal is on Seder night. And that will explain to us why we call it Shira Chadasha. It's a new song. How's it a new song? It's a song for the ages. It's from the ages. Maybe. But the first time it was said is when we came out of Egypt. And if you just came out, for you, it's a new song. In other words, as we mentioned a while back, if a person describes halal as a new song, we'd ask them, a new song, where have you been? But on Seder night, we all say it's a new song. And if someone asks us, where have you been? The answer is, I've been in Egypt and I just came out. And that's why it's a new song for me. It's a very wonderful marker for how much a person has just identified with leaving Egypt if they approach halal as a song that has never been sung before. And from a certain point of view, for each Pesach, it hasn't. Interestingly, the two halves of halal really reflect the two halves of the Seder. Because the Seder, it is split in half. And not only is it split in half, divided by Shulchan Orech, which is a nice, could be a hefty divider. But the two halves of the Seder, they actually don't even face the same direction. By which I mean, the first half of the Seder faces backwards towards Mitzrayim. But once you get past Shulchan Orech, everything after that faces forwards. And the question, of course, is, well, you know, make up your mind. Because, you know, when it comes to Nirtza, Lashana Babu Shalayim, and it's all about, good times to come, but decide. In other words, there's a time for everything. But this is a 180-degree about turn. I thought we were in the past, which is its own thing. But then we about face. But the understanding is, and I think it gives a deeper access to what's happening on Seder night. The original redemption from Egypt, or one could say our Egypt experience, you could say, is the formative exile experience. If you're familiar with the term, which we are, of course, Maase Avo Siman Labonim, right? What happens in the prototype generations, the archetypical generations, then is experienced later on, re-experienced through later generations. So you could say that our exile in Egypt was the root exile experience. It's like a Maase Avos almost for exile. And our redemption from Egypt is the root redemption experience. And all subsequent exiles and redemptions are branches thereof. It's very interesting. The Chidah points out in one of his Sfarim that our arrival into Egypt is described by the verse, Ve'ele Shemos B'nei Yisrael Haba'im Mitzrayima. They're coming to Egypt. It's almost like a present. It's in the present. Haba'im Mitzrayima. The word Ba'im comprises the four letters, Bet, Aleph, Yud, and Mem. Says the Chidah, Bavel, Edom, Yavan Madai. In other words, compacted within the arrival into Egypt is already the root pre-experience of the later, right? Bavel, Babylon, Edom, which is the exile of Rome, the current exile, Yavan, Greece, and Madai, Paros of Madai, which is when the Purim story took place. It's all in Egypt. So when we come out, so that means we've experienced redemption at a root level. And as we know, the branches are a product of the roots. What are we doing every Pesach? We're looking to, in a sense, reconnect with the root of our redemption so as to hasten the branches from also achieving that status. There is a very interesting comment of the Sfas Emes. I do not claim to know the Sfas Emes in any way, but this nugget, because the central matzah, the go-to matzah, is the middle one. And what do? We break it into half, yachatz, and we put half of it, to keep the smaller half in front of us, the bigger half is put away, and then when does it come back? Well, it comes back after you've basically given in to someone's exorbitant demands for whatever new thing that it is. But finally, the afikomen comes back, tzafon, and it's back. The larger part of that matzah has been hidden for most of the Seder. And then it resurfaces. And the Sfas Emes says, it's the same entity. But this is exactly what happened into the concept of the redemption of the Jewish people, whereby when we left Egypt, so we got a piece of it, but the bigger piece hasn't happened yet, and it's the same concept, and it's been put away. But afterwards, as we start to look forwards to future things, so then that piece comes back, and that's the greater geula. And that's why there is no contradiction. It's not a change in topic. If we ever move from looking backwards to looking forwards, it's all an expression of the same idea. And on the contrary, the more deeply you look backwards, the more confidently you can look forwards, because you're accessing the root geula energy from which the final redemption will come. What's very interesting, I often feel, about the Jewish year is that it has all of Jewish history in it. In other words, all of the major events that took place in our formative history are part of every year, in the sense that what happened in our formative history? We left Mitzrayim, we got the Torah, got the Luchos broken, we got Kapara, and we have all of that every year. I think it's a very interesting way of looking at each year in Jewish history as another chapter of Jewish history. So in a sense, you really need to check in with all of those events, all of those historical events, to arm you for the coming year of another year of Jewish history. Which means that in the same way that we all understand that when we mark Yom Kippur, when we go through Yom Kippur, it's not a commemoration of the fact that the Jewish people were atoned for the Egel. I guess maybe we either think about that or we don't. It's very clear to us that this is not a historical retrospective. It's something that we need for this year. You need Yom Kippur just like they needed it. We need it every year for that year. And the notion that when Shavuos comes, which is commemorates the giving of the Torah, so it's not just commemorating the giving of the Torah. We receive it anew each year for that year. And when we come to Seder night, and Seder night is the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, so you also have to leave Egypt each year for that year. It's very interesting how the Torah refers to Pesach as Chag Ha'aviv. It always emphasizes that it's Chodesh Aviv, it's in the springtime, even though, as far as we're concerned, whenever it is, that's when it is. But part of it is that the Torah is emphasizing that Pesach itself, it's like the springtime. In the spring, the world that's kind of remained dormant for a while, it's gone to hibernation a little bit, and certain things have, but it's all leading towards a rejuvenation, towards a rebirth. So if Pesach is the birth of the Jewish people, and Pesach each year is the rebirth of the Jewish people, and they need it each year for that year. And that's why I think it's certainly worthwhile to give due attention to again, as we said in the beginning, to the atmosphere of Seder night. It's a busy night. It's actually a chaotic night. I mean, my cousin told me he would walk with Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach to shul, and once Rav Shlomo Zalman just said to him, he meant it in a halachic sense, but I think it's true in every sense. He finds it very interesting that that night, on the first night of Pesach, is called Leil HaSeder, the night of order. There's a nice thought. It's got to be one of the most chaotic evenings until everyone sits down, and then something's going to spill, but he was talking more in the halakha, so all the brachos go missing, and then everything gets chopped in half and rearranged, and so the halachic mind of Shlomo Zalman Orbach sees a lack of seder there, and you have to work it out. But in our experience, at a certain point, you just need to give up trying to assert seder. My more Hasidic way of relating to the mayhem that can often ensue on Seder night, and good that it does, is that this is also an atmospheric recreation of the mayhem that must have pertained on the night that we left Egypt. I don't think we left in an orderly fashion, following the sign to the exits. I think it was just absolute tohu vavohu. So that's my comfort, at least, if we bezeir anpin replicate those conditions. But it's important not to lose our heads, and certainly not to lose our hearts, because more than anything else, Rosh Hashanah, really all of the emotional awakening that took place in the original Pesach should be taking place on every subsequent Pesach. I'm not sure if anyone has coined this phrase, but I like to refer to Seder night as the Rosh Hashanah of the Jewish heart, because the cerebral matters to come, you'll receive the Torah in due course, but in terms of what it means to be Jewish and just that alone, and to make that initial connection with Hashem, and then to reestablish that connection, to rejuvenate it and to energize it, that's something that we look to do. And in conclusion, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, the Ramchal, well known, has a short monograph called Ma'amar HaChochma. And he says something very interesting about Seder night. And again, I think it changes, I think it's a good encapsulation of the last few moments of our discussion, because he says what each Seder night does is actually continues the original process of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And he gives the analogy, if a person has a big tree he needs to fell, so the first few whacks of the axe, they're like, you know, the gesunter wax, and they really do, you know, a massive amount of, but it hasn't fallen yet, and you need to keep knocking. And he says each Seder night in each year is another knock in that tree, and when it falls, so that's the falling of the final exile. So it's what it means is, again, we look backwards to look forwards, as if to say, the more you go back to the trunk, really, where this happened, and on Seder night, we're back on the night that it happened. A night in the year is a place in time. If you would go back and visit in Egypt where the Jewish people lived, if you could identify it, it's that place. It doesn't commemorate that place. It is that place. And when you go back to the day in the year when we left, it is that place in the year. It's that you're revisiting that place, and you're able to then avail yourself and tap into that Geula energy. So these, I believe, are sentiments that are worthy of our deliberation, worthy of contemplation, and Mitzvah Hashem, we should all merit to have the Geula experience at our Seder, and each individual household should make their contribution in bringing the Jewish people a decisive step further to the final Geula, so as we say, Lashana Haba, Yerushalayim HaBnuya. All the very best, Masha. Okay.